This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
Good afternoon to you. Shortly heading to Kalgoorlie Boulder, where the big Diggers and Dealers Mining Forum is underway today. As you heard in the news, Oxford professor and keynote speaker at the forum, Ian Golden, had some really interesting things to say about China, and in particular mentioning the possibility of a Cold War. Crossing to Diggers shortly here on the Country Hour. And also today, after 12:30, you are going to meet Mavis Jarrod from NIL in Western Victoria. Now, Mavis has just turned 99, and as one of Australia's first female truckies, she has a few stories to tell.
At one stage, we went up the other side of Mildura. And as we got out there, it started to rain. And, of course, we couldn't get back where we pulled up to get the sheep. We were stuck there for a week. When we ran out of food, we shot galahs because Terry, my older son, was with us and he took his gun with him. And we cooked galahs just on hot bricks. And that's the way we lived for a week.
More stories from Mavis Jarrod after news headlines at 12:30. You are tuned to the Country Hour here on the ABC right across Western Australia. It is 12:06. Head of the WA Farmers Grains Council says the federal government has forgotten about Western Australia and is paying lip service to its concerns about the shortage of workers to help get the crop off this season. Mick Fells says the entire Australian economy is screaming for access to some skilled foreign workers, and the fact it's falling on deaf ears is incredibly frustrating. A proposal to quarantine about 1,000 skilled machinery operators from the Northern Hemisphere on Christmas Island is still sitting with the federal government. And Mick Fells says that's not good enough. Mick, on Friday you attended the Premier's Skills Summit, which was set up to try and address some of these workforce challenges. What solution surfaced to the top?
Yeah, well, we looked at two different aspects of it. One was the immediate short-term problem, and the other was the medium-term, things to address the medium-term problem. But obviously what we're talking about here is the short-term problem, which is getting enough skilled workers to take the crop off. And despite the fact that this was all sectors of the West Australian economy, and the full cabinet was there and the Premier, they're not just talking the talk, they're walking the walk on this. And across all sectors, the one thing that came to the top of the list was the need to fast track skilled workers to be able to immigrate into Western Australia urgently.
Well, that's no surprise to you, I guess.
You came up
with this idea going back quite a while now, which was the option of perhaps getting 1,000 skilled workers, machinery operators in from the Northern Hemisphere. The idea was to put them on Christmas Island. That's what the Agriculture Minister actually came up with, the idea of using the Commonwealth's Christmas Island facilities to quarantine those workers and then get them here in WA to get the crop off. So are you any closer to making that happen, or has time run out now?
Well, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, Belinda, when we really started raising the dial on this one, and we said we've got literally three or four weeks, and, here we are 3 or 4 weeks later, and, as pessimistically expected, very little has happened. Due credit to the WA state government, was very clear at this summit on Friday that from the Premier down, they understand the gravity of this situation, and they're committed to come out with solutions, but it's one thing to say that and another thing to actually get solutions. To be honest, I think this is sitting on the doorstep of the federal government, and I think they forget that Western Australia is here at the moment.
Why do you say that?
I received a letter back from Minister Littleproud, which was pretty much along the lines of the interview that you had on the Country Hour a week or two ago, really paying lip service to the issue. He pointed me towards various visa programs and so on, protocols that are currently available, didn't even mention Christmas Island or quarantine options. I really don't think the feds care. It's hugely disappointing. West Australia is doing a lot of work to support the Australian economy at the moment, and the grain sector is too, and yet they're paying lip service to this issue. It's really frustrating. I mean, anyone who heard Minister Littleproud on the Country Hour I think, would have left with a pretty bad taste in their mouth. He basically just slagged off Western Australia for 10 minutes on the interview, tried to score as many cheap political shots as he could against our state government, and then got off the phone. So, and really, I don't know if we've heard anything since. So the Minister, McTiernan, told me on Friday that she has sent a request into the federal government. As far as I understand, that's unanswered at this stage. So, you know, what are they doing? I know there's big problems in New South Wales at the moment. There's another 20 million people in the country who still need to be getting on with business, and they can't just focus on one thing the whole time. They need to sort everything else out as well. So, you know, the pressure's on for the feds to step up to the plate at the moment and help us out a bit here.
As far as the harvest goes for this season, though, you really are going to, as an industry, just have to manage with the workforce that you can find at this point.
Well, you know, you never want to give up. So we're going to keep pushing. And, you know, what we've found, Belinda, all the way through with these, I don't know if other people have noticed, but, you know, we push and we push and we push for a solution for seeding, and then something happens in time for harvest. And we push and we push for harvest, and something happens in time for seeding. So, you know, unfortunately, there's like a 6 month lag between when you need something and when governments seem to take notice. So we will keep pushing on this end, and hopefully, you know, we can still come up with something that's helpful in time for harvest, basically, you know, for workers to be allowed to come in. But, you know, the fallback position was at least it might help us for seeding next year, but, you know, we've still got harvest to do. It's not too late to do something. I mean, the only reason it's getting too late is we know that we're probably going to have to wait another month for someone to get off their backside in Canberra and pay attention. So if they could just wake up to themselves now, we could still get something in place in time. We need a quarantine option. That's what it boils down to. Christmas Island's been put up. We had a pro forma response from the Federal Minister for Agriculture on that really didn't do anything for us. So, you know, there's other options, but we really are running out of time to flesh out other options now. So I haven't had a really good explanation why we can't use Christmas Island yet, other than that they can't be bothered. So, you know, it's not too late to do something. The feds need to step up, and that's what we're asking them to do.
How frustrating is it when you've got a solution there, a proposal on the desk of the federal government, and that's just where it's sitting at this point, and every day and every week that ticks over, you're getting closer to harvest?
It's really frustrating, and not the least because so many people have put so much energy into this, not just myself, but, you know, there's a whole lot of people who have been working on this from all ends of the agricultural sector, plus the rest of the economy as well. You know, like, everybody's just screaming. It's just a really clear message coming from the entire economy. We need access to some skilled foreign workers. And the fact that, you know, it's just falling on deaf ears, it's incredibly frustrating. And, you know, we don't want to see all that effort wasted, not to mention the fact we still need a solution. This problem hasn't gone away in the last few weeks. And, you know, realistically, it does mean we'll be harvesting for an extra month this year, and the value of the crop will, you know, potentially $500 million worth of loss over the next 12 months, plus all the stress and broken marriages and everything else that comes out of these situations. I mean, that's the reality of it. People leaving the industry, marriages falling apart, you know, and everything else. And it can easily be avoided if the feds would just pay attention.
Mick, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Belinda.
President of the WA Farmers Grains Council, Mick Fells. And I have made a few calls to follow up some of those points Mick has made, specifically to try and get a response from the federal government on the Christmas Island proposal. So that proposal to bring in about 1,000 skilled workers from the Northern Hemisphere, put them on the Commonwealth's Christmas Island facilities for the necessary quarantine period, and then get them over here to help harvest the crop. So put a call into the Federal Agriculture Minister's office. I was told to put the query to the Home Affairs Minister's office. And just not long ago, got an email from the Home Affairs office saying it had forwarded the query to the Finance Minister's office. And at this point, I haven't had an update from the Finance Minister's office. 14 past 12.
You're with Belinda Varaschetti on the Country Hour on ABC Local Radio, WA.
Well, the desperate search for skilled workers to help get the crop off here in WA is exactly the same on the other side of the country. With international borders still closed, all parts of the supply chain, from the farmers to the bulk handlers, are trying everything to find people keen and able with the skills to work. Hugh Hogan has this report.
Sort of can't go wrong really anywhere north of Parksville. Around there is really good. Sort of around the Forbes area where we do a lot of work, it's probably starting to get a little bit too wet, if anything.
Pat Dwyer is a farmer and contractor from north of Parks in the central west of New South Wales. His spray rig has been parked for weeks with paddocks too wet to get onto, and he's flat out trying to keep up with the workload.
Yeah, we'd definitely look at expanding our business if the people were there. Like, there's more work than you could poke a stick at, really, for us. And, you know, we're busy and busy each year, but we've sort of pulled the reins back on everything we do just because, you know, the workers aren't there, really.
Over the last 18 months, thousands of international workers have left Australia, and very few have returned because of the ongoing COVID restrictions on international arrivals.
Normally there would be a lot of backpackers come over, and I think it's a big issue. Like I say, it's not a massive issue for us, but some bigger operations, it's definitely a big issue.
And it doesn't get much bigger than GrainCorp.
Like last year, we're shaping up for another big crop across East Coast Australia. It is back to a traditional winter. It's cold and wet. And goodness, as we come out into spring, as it warms up, it's going to explode.
For operations manager Nigel Lotz, an explosion in crops means he needs to find around 3,000 casuals to run the largest network of grain bunkers on the East Coast.
To date, we've been open for basically a week now. We've already had, I think it's nearly 1,000 applicants, which is terrific. But we're always conscious that there is a big demand pull in agribusiness at the moment. All the way through the supply chain, people are after people to come on board.
With the usual backpackers not available, GrainCorp's targeting people finishing Year 12 or university who are looking for a different experience.
There's challenging on pay. There's a lot of people targeting people, and I think pay rates are going up. There's a lot of infrastructure projects across the country as well. You've got inland rail starting to kick up. So there's a lot of demand on these regional rural workforce. Look, one way or another, we will achieve a good harvest receival and a good customer service delivery for the growers, but it will be a challenge.
Not good. I could probably use some other words, but yep, it's real poor. There's just no one around.
Rod Gribble is the president of the Australian Custom Harvesters Association.
Our members have been advertising for months and months, and there's just no skilled operators around.
He's worried any delays from a lack of workers could spell disaster come harvest time.
If those crops don't get harvested at the right time and they have a major weather event, that's mega, mega millions of dollars lost. Mega millions. Now that runs all the way through from contractors to farmers to the community to the wider Australian economy. We're not talking a couple of million, we're talking multitudes of millions.
He's calling for fully vaccinated skilled workers to be allowed into the country and to do their mandatory quarantine on farms.
You know, we have people that have been here before. They want to come again. You know, we're talking maybe 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000. That's all. We can't see why, if these people are fully vaccinated, have a negative COVID test and isolate out on farm, because quite frankly, their greatest risk is isolating in a city hotel.
And according to Mr. Gribble, pay isn't an issue.
If there's no skilled ones here, you can pay them $500 an hour. It's not going to make any bloody difference. You need skilled workers. You know, a lot of these people, they get paid more than $30 an hour. They're punching over $2,000 to $3,000 a week. You know, I wouldn't mind getting paid that much.
And he says you can't just chuck anyone into a header and expect them to be able to do the job.
A modern header is $800,000 plus. Okay, they've got a lot of technology on them. They're certainly not idiot-proof, but you need someone who knows what they're doing, has got a basic idea about the harvester and the harvesting operation. You know, it's fanciful to believe that you can train someone on some sort of two-day-a-week tech course and be able to have a skilled operator out the other end. It's just not going to happen.
Back in the Central West, Pat Dwyer agrees.
You're sort of up around $600,000 there for a machine like that, and you sort of can't just have anyone in it because it starts costing big dollars when things go wrong, you know, and you sort of got to have experienced blokes doing that. And not only that, with chemical and things like that, with a boom spray, you know, you sort of just can't put in whatever and hope for the best.
And he says a lot of people are starting to worry about the upcoming harvest.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real issue. You only see lately a lot of people are already advertising, looking for harvest workers. You know, I've even heard of blokes selling machines because just physically haven't got blokes to sit in them. So yeah, I think it's going to be a big snowball effect. And you know, coming off a couple of hard years and having a good year last year, and we sort of need another one to back everything up this year. You know, everyone's going to be pretty well under the pump to get the harvest off, to make the most of it.
I'd just like federal and state governments to realise how serious this situation is, and they must act very soon.
He's not alone with those thoughts. Rod Gribble from the Australian Custom Harvesters Association, ending that story by Hugh Hogan. 20 past 12 here on the Country Hour. You can have your say on text 0448 922 604. This from Michael. Getting staff from Europe, they will be COVID dual injected, will be tested at least twice before leaving Europe, and tested again at least twice when in WA. Requesting Christmas Island is just a distraction by the WA government. We need hotel or on-farm quarantine. I firmly believe isolated on farm will work very safely and makes it much more flexible for all of us. We want to bring in individual staff that we have previously had on our farms, says Michael. Andrew says, read the comments by Mick Fells you heard a few moments ago. How about getting local federal MP Rick Wilson to respond to the WA Ag Labor issue? The runaround is totally unacceptable. I did think of calling Rick Wilson earlier today, and I think I might do that. I didn't get a chance to this morning, but a good idea. Thank you, Andrew. And this from Ron. Last week we had a cocky bragging he runs a multi-million dollar business and then he wants to employ foreign backpackers and the like. It's about time they put their money where their mouths are. Let's invest now in our youth, with workplace apprenticeships and incentives. People are sick of being underpaid and treated like dogs. Cockies are certainly right when they say something needs to change, says Ron. The text 0448 922 604. 22 past 12, not far away from an update from the newsroom, and then checking out the weather conditions right around Western Australia. First, though, like a lot of events over the last 18 months, Queensland's largest agricultural show, the ECCA, has been cancelled for the second year in a row due to a growing COVID-19 cluster, as you know. But here in WA, one of the biggest events on the mining and resources calendar is up and running. The 30th annual Diggers and Dealers Mining Forum is underway in Kalgoorlie-Boulder this lunchtime. And someone who's been to half of those 30 get-togethers is Esperance-based rural and resources reporter Tara de Landgraaf. Now, Tara, you have been to a few of these. Is it pretty much more of the same again this year?
A little bit of deja vu, but I'm not going to lie. But look, as last year was changed in terms of the dates, it was October last year, so it feels like it has come around that little bit quicker this year because it physically has. So look, very much the same, but different. We've again got speakers calling in via Zoom this year, including the keynote speaker. But there was a nice little video montage of some of the past programs and speakers at the start of today's proceedings, so it did make me a little bit nostalgic. And certainly the media room's not as full as it usually is. There are a number of presenters who obviously were hoping to come over from the East Coast who can't be here, so not as many people, I suppose, who we'd normally see here. But that being said, it's still an absolute sellout with 2,400 participants, so it's maybe this is the new normal.
And a pretty buoyant mood is the story I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pretty good 12 months for everybody, really. And we've certainly seen this around today. There are a lot of smiling faces, and I don't think there's really a commodity that hasn't, you know, really sort of picked up in the last 12 months. We've really seen lithium especially do that, iron ore just completely out of sight. And Deloitte have released some figures over the weekend. They compile an index of WA-listed companies, and year on year, up 46%, so absolutely massive. And as Deloitte partner Dave Andrews explains, that's led to a very buoyant mood in general as well as here at Diggers.
Amazing. I mean, we are sitting at record highs at the moment this year, closing at $293.9 billion as the aggregated market cap for our WA-listed companies, up 46% from last year, which is amazing. The COVID impact, that initial pandemic shock, certainly put pressure on last year's position. But really what we've seen this year is an absolute return to power from a lot of the commodities that we track and that are relevant to our WA companies, which is really a testament to the quality of the companies that we've got in WA, particularly those linked to some of our more significant commodities, which have seen huge price rises this year, iron ore being an absolute standout, you know, over 112% up this year, closing at $216 a tonne. Amazing prices.
So despite the pandemic, Tara, still plenty of people at this year's event and all the functions, I guess, that come along with it too.
Yeah, absolutely. You can hear some people moving things around in the background there. There are people all over the place and very, very happy, and events going ahead last night as well as there always is every evening after the official proceedings. This year there are less restrictions than there were last year, so some more events going ahead. But yesterday actually two planes were turned around, Belt. They got to Kalgoorlie Boulder, they circled and they went back to Perth. So some of those functions did start a little bit later, but once everybody turned up, all of those people who were in attendance, I suppose, were sort of vying to be top spot to be heard. In particular, the gold miners, who are usually, you know, the biggest and brightest, especially at in Kalgoorlie Boulder, even they had to tussle to be heard this year.
Yeah, of course, gold's come off its peak. I mean, it peaked about this time last year, actually, at around about $2,700. But, you know, we're still in a band of kind of $2,450, $2,500. So still pretty good gold prices in the long term. You don't have to go back too many years, and gold was trading, you know, around about $1,600 to $1,800 an ounce. So, you know, most gold miners are actually still doing quite well. Maybe not, you know, running the printing press quite as hard as the iron ore industry. Of course, all of that also creates some challenges for us as well because of things like labour market and what have you that a lot of people are talking about at the moment.
And Tara, you mentioned earlier that you caught the keynote address from Professor Ian Golden. What did he have to say?
Yeah, so Professor Ian Golden, an academic, as you can probably tell by his name, but from Oxford University, and he presented, as I said, via Zoom, and he, first of all, congratulated Australia for how well they've done through the pandemic, really, but I was just in awe as to how he was able to come across every aspect of the economy that he was. And he was very famous in predicting in 2014 that a pandemic would be that next big global crisis. So a lot of foresight there. He spoke about some of the current issues, vaccinations, that kind of thing, and also about how the pandemic was accelerating globalisation, which in turn will mean more demand for lithium and some of those battery metals to really help feed that demand for EVs and all the tools that we now know as commonplace. He spoke about the global situation and stimulus measures around the world reaching $17 trillion at the moment, Bell, which is about 20% of global GDP. So that's pretty crazy to think about. Of course, being diggers, he was asked about his view on gold and the gold price and where it was heading. He did say that he expected the price to stay around the $2,000 an ounce mark. He didn't really think that it would reach the $3,000 mark that some were predicting in the next 5 years. But what was really interesting was his stance on China, and that took many people's interest. He sort of said that China was his biggest concern, and he mentioned the words a potential cold war, saying that while we don't need to agree with China on everything, we do need them to be in the room and at the table to work together.
I do think that saber-rattling and talking the tensions up is not the right approach. My own view is that we should disagree fundamentally on human rights. We disagree fundamentally on some issues. But that should not let us stop agreeing to create robust global growth, agreeing on to deal with the crises of globalization, pandemics, climate change, and others. What we need is de-escalation, an agreement to talk fundamentally on the things that are principles we uphold, but not allowing that to get in the way of business and not allowing it to get in the way of agreeing to work together on solving global problems.
Well, great to get his thoughts on China. Tara de Landgraaft, thank you so much for that. I do know it's lunchtime. There's quite a bit of activity in the background there at the forum, so I will let you get back to it.
Thanks so much, Mel.
Rural and Resources reporter Tara de Landgraft in her element at the big mining and resources forum, Diggers and Dealers. It is 12:30 here on the Country Hour, and with an update from the newsroom, here's Tony Carr.
Good afternoon, Belinda. A man in his 90s has died with coronavirus to become the 15th fatality during the current Sydney outbreak. His death is linked to an outbreak at an aged care facility at Liverpool in Sydney's southwest. New South Wales recorded 207 new local cases. At least 50 of them involved people who were in the community while infectious. Queensland has recorded 13 new cases of locally acquired COVID-19 cases overnight, all are linked to the current cluster. The Deputy Premier, Stephen Miles, says the lockdown in 11 local government areas is to be extended by 5 days until Sunday. Victoria's Chief Health Officer says that state is in a good position to further ease COVID lockdown measures, due in part to its mass vaccination program. Victoria has recorded 2 new local COVID-19 cases, both of them linked to known outbreaks. The state's health department says both cases were in quarantine throughout their infectious period. And Perth's dams are just over half full after heavy rainfall last month. July was Perth's wettest month in 26 years. More than 270 millimetres of rain fell. Belinda, more news at 1 o'clock.
Tony, thank you for that. It is just so interesting as I cross the bridge each day on the way to work, just looking at the Swan River around Guildford and just thinking, how much higher can this go? 29 to 1 here on the Country Hour. You are keen to have your say on the shortage of workers facing the grain sector, not only here in WA in the lead up to harvest, but obviously right around the country. This from Brad. I and other locals couldn't get a job a few years back on the farm because farmers were getting cheap labour from overseas. Now some farmers are screaming out for workers and it feels like karma may have bitten them on the backside, says Brad. This for Alana McTiernan. Why can't the state government find some state facilities in our vastness or allow farm quarantine, says Rick in Margaret River. This from Phil. Maybe pensioners could be allowed to work for a short time without it affecting their pensions. There's a few around at the moment. It's not worth working for a short period because of all the rigmarole you have to go through. Norm in Kalgoorlie says this is the federal government responsibility. The feds are in charge of international borders, not the state government. Petition the feds for your workforce. And in response to Ron, who is having a crack at farmers underpaying workers on farm, this, hey Ron, who's underpaying? We're certainly not. And we add in a vehicle and housing. 0448 922 604. 28 to 1.
The Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
Shortly off to Mushave for the results of the cattle market and Richard Hudson here in the studio in a moment to go through the rainfall readings. But right now, off to the Bureau of Meteorology, and Gianni Colangelo is with you this afternoon. How's it looking around the Southwest Land Division? And it's great to have you back, Gianni. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Belinda. And yeah, it's a lovely week to be back, mind you, after the onslaught that we had throughout July with all that rain. We do have a much different picture for the week ahead. We do have some, starting in the south, we do have some shower activity still persisting about the south coast. And generally clearing conditions as we look further north through the southwest land, inland parts of the Southwest Land Division, and clear for the northern parts of the state. Just heading back to the south again, as we just touch off on a couple of things. Those rains from the majority of July have resulted in those minor to moderate flood levels, which we still do have warnings out for in the Swan Avon and Blackwood catchments. So river levels have been elevated there and maintain their heights, and also expecting with the clearing conditions to see some frost and fog in the inland parts of the Southwest Land Division over the next couple of days or so, with much cooler temperatures than what we've had. Otherwise, up in the north, we do have some strengthening southeast winds, which will surge each and every morning for the next couple of days or so. And likewise, we've got some coastal wind warnings for strong winds in the Pilbara and Kimberley. And other warnings around the state, we've got some strong wind warnings in the south, Esperance and Eucla coasts for those stronger southwest, southwesterly winds.
Johnny, where in the Southwest Land Division do you think those temperatures will drop to sort of those, you know, potential frost situations?
Over quite a broad area, really. We saw yesterday a number of locations in the Wheat Belt and Great Southern and even inland parts of the Southwest reach very close to zero, actually. And even the isolated location in the Goldfields reach 2 degrees or so. Very similar areas expected to have rather low minimums over the next couple of days. It's a question of whether you'll get that low or not, but we'll be issuing those forecasts at your usual time of 4 o'clock this afternoon.
All right, then. Is that a wrap then for northern and eastern parts too?
I would say so, yeah.
All right, and warnings this afternoon then?
We've got coastal wind warnings for the Pilbara and West Kimberley coasts, also the Esperance and Eucla coasts. And we also have a minor flood warning for the Swan and a moderate flood warning for the Blackwood.
Johnny, thank you so much. Appreciate that. 24 to 1. And now on to the rainfall readings. Looking back over the weekend, here's Richard Hudson.
Yeah, and in the northern and eastern forecast districts, I'll just go through those that are 5 and above. And again, nothing worth reading out in the Kimberley or the Pilbara regions. But in the Gascoyne, Bulga Downs 6, Biro 7, Carey Downs 5, Challa 8, Coodardie 7, Q5, Dulgunna 5 as well, and the same for Meekatharra. Meeka Station 8, Murchison 5, Mergoo 6, Ningen Station and Pullagaroo, love that one, 9 mils, Painsfine 7, and Ewan had 8. In the Goldfields, Edgedina 9, Jindalby 12, Kalgoorlie Boulder Airport 8, Coorawalli 13, Leonora 9, Norseman Airport 6. In the Eucla District, Balladonia and Eucla both received 6 mils and Eyre also 6 mils and Red Rocks Point received 8. Before I get on to the Southwest Land Division forecast, though, we touched on this on Friday. There's been just so much rain around, you could sort of get lulled into a false sense of security that everyone's getting it. But one section of the state that does seem to have missed out on all this rain is the pastoral country in the Murchison region. A few spots I just read out there received like 5 or so mils. We're talking, I don't know, 750 to 1,300 kilometres northeast of Perth, around towns such as Meekatharra and Wiluna. Craig Walker's a livestock agent who operates in that area. He's got clients in that area. And he's been out there just recently and he says the country's just looking really dry.
It's a little bit of a worry, that country out there, to be perfectly honest. They had a little bit of summer rain in some areas, but they've had no follow-up and it's extremely dry. There's some parts of it as bad as what it was in the lead-up to the summer last year. There's really very, very little grass. And if we... to give you an idea, like all the grass that's surrounding Wiluna, around the town side, that's all dead. There's quite a few trees in some of the other country that's starting to really show the signs of stress, and they're the old mulgas, which take a long time to regrow. Mm. But, you know, there's always been a little shower of 2, 3, 4 millimetres that go through, and you see the reports, Meekatharra is getting rain, but it's really not enough. Like, if we have a look at the western side, sort of from... Landor to the west and into the Gascoyne, you're starting to see that the ground got wet with a couple of big rains, 100 mil, but that country out there would sort of get 10 or 5, or, and the ground's never been wet, and so consequently the germination hasn't been there, and it's pretty ordinary, really.
Yeah, let's hope they get some more rain soon. That's Craig Walker from Midwest Agribusiness speaking to Joe Prendergast, and I suppose one positive of all of that is if the pastoralists in that Murchison area do have to get rid of some cattle because they're short of feed, the prices are certainly very good. Let's switch our attention to the Southwest Land Division and we'll go to 20 mils and above because just about everywhere got a fair bit. We'll start in the Central West, Badgingarra Research Station 20, Barberton East 23, Canterbury 25, New Norcia 31, and then in the Lower West, Anchortel 27, Bickley 32, Bolgart 20, Bolgart Bin 23, Bungendore 32, Dwelling Up 46, Gidgeganup 33, Jarrodale 33 as well, Julimar Forest 32, Carnot 32, Carrigullen North 38, Lake Chittering 28. In Yes. Then Millenden 20, Minston Park 22, Mulyabini 27, Moondarbrook 20, Mount Solis 35, Mirshay 24, Mundaring 25, New Nile 21, Pierce of the Raff Base 30, the same for Pinjarra South, Rolly Stone 36, Serpentine 27, 2J East 29, Watning 21, Werribee 31. In the southwest, there's been some pretty wild storms and lots of trees down. If you've had some damage on your farm, send us a text 0448 922 604. I know some avocado farms have been damaged, for instance. We might have more on that on tomorrow's show. Acton Park 26, Aldervale 28, Beetle Up 20, Boyne Up North 29, Bridgetown 28, Brunswick Junction 25 to 34. Bunbury 35, Busselton 23 to 28, Cape Lewin 21, Cape Naturalist 23, Capel North 22, Carlotta 20, Chapman Hill 28 to 25, 23 to 25, sorry, Collie 39 to 40, Kawarum up 32, Darden up 21 to 34, Dinan up 22, Donnybrook 16 to 26, Doyle Road 22, Ferguson Valley 24 to 33, Happy Valley Alert Station 22, Hentybrook 40, Jarrowood 27, Jindong 38, Logbrook 23, Ludlow 24, Manjimup 21 to 45, Mayenup South 21, Mount William 49, Newbickup 31, Northcliffe 29, Paindale Alert Station 22, Perryvale Orchard 28, Quinnan up 24, Ravenscliff Alert Station 25, Shannon 64, Thompson Brook 27, Tonebridge 26, Vass Highway 27, Walpole Forestry 67, that topped it for the weekend, Wilgarup 39, Windy Harbour 26, Wychcliffe 28 and Yungaril up 21. And then in the southern coastal region, still these are just 20 and above, everywhere just got some rain. Albany 20 to 38, Shane Beach 28, Denbarker 44, Denmark 52, Esperance 21, Kimberley 43, King River 35, Narracup West 33, Tamar 24, The Duke 24. In the central wheat belt, most places had sort of 1 to 15-ish, maybe a little bit more, but there's only a few that are worth reading out at 20 and above, and that's Mount Westdale 21, Northam 23, Redlands 20. Then in the Great Southern, Boddington North 33, Chaming Up 31, Coondee 20, Cranbrook 30, Culford 30, Darkin 26, Dumbleyung 21 to 24, Franklin 20 to 25, Highbury East 21, Cochrane 21, Mordetta 28, Narrogin 26, Poppinining 21, Quail Up 23, the same for Tunney, Wagen 23 to 24, Wandering 33, Wickapin 20, Wilgarra 32, and Williams North received 23 mils.
Richard, thanks for going through those figures. This is the Country Hour on the ABC right across Western Australia, 17 to 1. And a few more thoughts on the shortage of workers in the grain sector. I mean, it's across a range of sectors, but honing in on that sector today. James in 2J says, a lot of farmers make it sound like it's the end of the world with the current COVID circumstances. Why not take a month or so longer to complete the harvest instead of rushing to finish in a short time frame? Well, apparently that can cause all sorts of things like mould and sprouting, and you can start losing value from the crop. And can you ask Mick Fells what the going rate is for an experienced header driver with many grain checks in the $1 million plus? Labour is one of the minor expenses, but a lot of farmers are too tight to pay a decent wage. Well, I just text Mick and he says it's $35 plus an hour for a good experienced driver. 0448 922 604 to text through. Taking you off to an area near WA's south coast now, just between Albany and Esperance. After 3 years of dry winters, farmers in that Ravensthorpe district are celebrating what could be called a Goldilocks season. So not too much rain, not too little, just the right amount at the right time. But while the welcome rainfall reminds many farmers of winters in the 70s, authorities warn long-term drying trends indicate this season could be the exception, and so water conservation should still be a priority. Mark Bennett has the story.
In 2019, Mount Short Dam, a community rural water supply for Jenny Chambers' farm at North Ravensthorpe, was almost bone dry. It was repaired after the disastrous flood of 2017 blew out the back wall and then failed to fill for the next 2 years, following a run of winter droughts. But this winter has delivered a turnaround in fortune for local growers and the Mount Short Dam.
Yes, isn't it beautiful? Yeah, there's still plenty of capacity there for some more water in it, but it's great to see. The last time we were here, it was just a puddle.
The depth gauge shows it's now 3 metres deep and steadily filling. For Jenny Chambers, the season has lifted spirits around the district.
It's certainly turning out to be a nice season, definitely, yeah. We had rain in February, March, really, so we could do the good knockdown, and then we were actually seeding early April. A lot of the canola around here went in early April. And yeah, we've had, you know, 2 to 3 inches each month since then, so it's just been wonderful.
In this southern corner of the state, the winter of 2021 is painting a picture of green and gold, with canola already flowering.
The fact that we've had rainfall in double figures is the biggest thing, because over the last previous 3 years, we probably only had 4 events where the rainfall was over 10 mils. This year, I think I've counted, we're over 10 events already this year of over 10 mils, you know, like, you know, 25. It's just, and that's when you get your runoff, and that's when you can capture your water.
While roads have flooded and creeks have inundated paddocks, the dams are replenishing, providing insurance for the summer ahead. And while it's still early days, forecasters say the season has the potential to push total state grain production past 20 million tonnes.
Oh, it's just been an absolute complete change, really. This year has been not only good rainfall throughout to the end of July, but it's also been timely rainfall.
Ravensthorpe farmer Brad Clark has kept rainfall records from the early 60s.
The biggest difference, really, is that in about 1998, about 1998, the whole pattern of rainfall changed. And since then, I mean, this year sort of reverted back to the sort of rains we used to get in the 60s and 70s, but even with that in, it's changed a lot from 62 to 98 is just a quantum difference to 99 to 2021. In the last 12 years or so, we've probably had about 6 events of over 100 mils in a fall or an event, and that's unusual. We didn't used to have those so much back in the earlier decades.
Since 2019, 12 districts in the Esperance, Great Southern and Wheatbelt regions were declared water deficient, meaning many farmers had to cart water for livestock. But the widespread rain during autumn and winter this year has effectively ended a 3-year drought.
It's a little bit hard to know what the best thing to do is because, we've only got records for 100 or so years, and in the scheme of things, that's a fairly minuscule sort of period of time. So it's a little bit difficult to know whether this is a general downward trend or just the distribution, you know, changes from time to time, or whether this is just a blip itself. This 20-year period may well be a blip and it might revert back. No one really knows.
Last year, community dams across the Great Southern were at 59% capacity. They're now up to almost 90%. Overall, dams in the southwest are currently just over half full, as are the 13 metropolitan dams. But long-term trends indicate this winter could be just a blip, and Water Minister Dave Kelly warns that the pattern of rainfall decline has been evident for the past 40 years.
People get all excited about it. It's only something to be excited about because it is now so rare. We've only had average rainfall in the southwest of Western Australia 9 times in the last 30 years. And while this winter has been good and the farmers are pretty happy, it's not a turning the corner. It's not a breaking of the drought. The long-term decline in rainfall due to climate change in the southwest is continuing, and all the data says it's a one-way trend.
Meantime, growers are urging the government and farmers to continue building water resilience.
They're removing the farm water rebate scheme. The state government aren't supporting that, but they are supporting the strategic community dams. And, you know, perhaps they are looking at the town dams that they have run down over the last few years, that they're looking at reinstating catchments on them and improving them so there is actually water in, you know, around the area for people to cart from. And it's not just for stock water, people also, you know, in fire and emergencies, we need access to water as well. It's very important to maintain, to actually improve their, I guess, their on-farm water as well, but for the government to not let these sites run down. And I guess part of that is the community need to keep an eye on it as well. And if you have two or three good seasons, it's still good to maintain these emergency water supplies for the years that aren't so good.
Jenny Chambers, who farms just north of Ravensthorpe, near the south coast of Western Australia, catching up with Mark Bennett. 10 to 1, and before the news at 1, off to Mouchet. John Testrow is keeping an eye on things for you, and he'll run through the yarding and the prices at the cattle market shortly. First, though, a legend of the Australian trucking industry has just turned 99. Mavis Jarrod is from Nil in Western Victoria, and she started driving trucks at the age of 19. She was one of Australia's first female articulated drivers.
Well, I got married at 18 because we had a farm at Broughton. And Ivan's two, like my first husband's two brothers, they went to the war, and I had to take over driving the tractor and feeding sheep and all the rest of it. And we had an old Enter truck, and it was the time when they built the silo here, and I was the only woman to cart 60 open bags of wheat over. Well, you know what the roads were like. They were just slush and drains. No bitumen whatsoever. And I just kept on driving trucks. In fact, I left school at 15 to help my father on the farm and driving horse teams and goodness knows what. And I think I was brought up more to do a man's work than what I was to do women's work.
Now, I think, Mavis, you were actually driving trucks before you got your truck licence. How did you get on with the police when you did actually go in to get your licence?
Well, he just told me to take the B thing home. He knew that I could drive it.
Because he'd seen you driving for a couple of years?
Oh, well, he hadn't seen me driving, but apparently some other police had seen me driving.
Mavis, certainly truck driving is a male-dominated industry now, and I imagine even much more so back then. But what reception did you get? How did the other drivers in the industry treat you?
Well, they always treated me as a lady. That's one thing I can always say. I never got abused or made fun of or anything. In fact, I was like a mother to all the other young truckies around here. They treated Ivan and I more like their parents than what they did other truckies.
Mavis, I'm sure there are endless stories you've got from your trucking days, but are there any in particular that have stuck with you?
Yes, going down through just this side of Beaufort. We used to go over a bridge, and as we come around to go around this bendy old lake, and there was only room for one truck to go around, and I went to go with my hand, like, to switch my headlights down, and my wedding ring come in contact with the switch and put my lights out, and I had to drive around this bendy old road with no lights whatsoever, and that scared the very life out of me. When I got up to my brother-in-law, he said, I could see you coming, he said, with no lights. He said it scared the very lights out of him too.
Mavis, you did plenty of interstate truck driving. I think you drove up to Queensland. What was it like driving through those remote places like Western New South Wales at a time when you didn't have any modern luxuries like mobile phones?
At one stage, we went up the other side of Mildura, way out into the bush. And as we got out there, it started to rain. And, of course, we couldn't get back. And we were stuck at the shed where we pulled up to get the sheep. We were stuck there for a week. When we ran out of food, we shot galahs because Terry, my oldest son, was with us and he took his gun with him. And we cooked galahs just on a brick, hot bricks. And that's the way we lived for a week. And that was one of the things that really has stuck in my mind because in those days, things were tough.
Mavis, it certainly sounds like it wasn't a glamorous lifestyle, that it was a pretty tough way to make a living, but it also sounds like it was something that you really found rewarding.
Well, I really loved it. If I had my life over again, that's the sort of life I'd love, because I've always been an outdoor person.
Mavis, before we started having this chat, you said that your hearing isn't too flash. Now, I think you're doing pretty well, but just tell me why your hearing isn't as good as it could be.
Well, it's because of the motor being in between the two seats. You couldn't get away from the noise, actually. Ivan was deaf, went deaf, and so did my four sons. It affected their hearing, especially the two younger ones.
Mavis, you were inducted into the Road Transport Hall of Fame several years ago. What was the feeling when you heard that news?
Well, my youngest son, that's his photo up there in the gold frame, and he was suffering from a brain tumour, and he was the one that wanted me to go into the Hall of Fame. And he passed away in March, and the Hall of Fame was in August, and I had to go through with it. But I cried all the time that I was being inducted, because he wasn't with me. He'd passed away. But I went up there, and the woman that was running the show, she said she'd been all over Australia and she'd never seen another woman that held a semi-licence. So apparently I'm the first woman in Australia to have a semi-licence.
Mavis, you must be proud of the career you've had.
Yes. I wouldn't change lives with anyone, actually.
Mavis, you turned 99 this week. Happy birthday and congratulations on such a wonderful career.
Oh, thank you, but I don't feel 99.
Oh, trucking legend Mavis Jarrad speaking to Angus Verley. Happy birthday, Mavis. And if you do a search for ABC Rural and Mavis, you will find Angus's story online. And you can see Mavis with some of her trucks, including a 1946 Ford and an old Leyland filly loaded with sheep. 3 minutes to one, off to the markets now, off to Mouchet today, and 1,393 cattle were yarded for sale today at Mouchet, so that's down about 430 on last week. John Testrow's at Mouchet, and John, were they mostly pastoral cattle today?
Yeah, good afternoon, Belinda. Certainly were, Belinda. Yarding, and because of that, probably the quality slipped a little bit as well too. But demand from graziers for young store 2 pastoral cattle improved, and they helped rates gain on those types. And the short supply to the trade of quality local yearlings also helped push values up on those types also. But I'll run through the details just quickly. On the few local grain supplementary fed mixed-sex yearlings that were penned today, they sold from 400 to 486 and gained 25 cents. But it was all about the pastoral section. And the winner steers, they sold from 320 to 440 to remain very firm. Winner heifers gained 50 cents on a better selection, and they sold from 250 to 468. Heavier yearling steers sold from 320 to 428, up 35 cents a kilo, with the corresponding heifers up 25 cents, and they sold from 280 to 370. Grown steers were all pastoral, and they sold from 300 to 358, up 9 cents on similar types that were penned last week. New grown heifers penned today, but another big penning of cows, and they were mainly pastoral bred but lacked the quality of last week's offering. Medium weight score 2s to processors sold from 250 to 280, firm to 4 cents nearer, with the prime heavies to processors back 10 cents on the weight and numbers and quality, and they sold from 280 to 322. The bull market, just to finish it all off, mainly pastorals, light defeaters and exports sold from 300 to 496 to remain very firm. Prime heavy to processors sold from 324 to 372, again firm. But overall, not a bad sale considering the quality of the cattle that were on offer today, Belinda. I'm John Testrow. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you. I forgot the sign off. Thank you very much for that, John. John Testrow going through the Mouchet cattle market for you today. He'll be back here tomorrow going through the sheep market details.
Hello, I'm Sally Sara. Join me for The World Today. Health experts doubtful Australia will reach its 70% vaccination target by Christmas. What does it mean for lockdowns and border closures? We have the latest COVID case numbers across the states. And after criticism from the Pharmacy Guild, primary health networks say they're getting the job done to deliver personal protective gear to pharmacists. Those stories and more from across the country and around the globe coming up this lunchtime on The World Today.
It is not far away, a few seconds away from the news at one and then off to The World Today. Hopefully some sort of response from the federal government on the Christmas Island proposal for you tomorrow. News time, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.